Hey, listeners, this is your biohacker speaking, aka Katie. If there is one thing I dread, it is walking down the skincare aisle of my local pharmacy. There are just so many options to choose from, and I never really know if something is actually working. So that's why I reached out to Rachel Varga for some TLC and guidance through her one-on-one consultation. And honestly, there is just nothing better than putting your skincare regimen into the hands of someone you trust and who really takes the time to evaluate your skin type and then give you access to products you just won't find on supermarket shelves. Since I'm on camera almost all the time, I really can't afford to get a breakout or have my skin looking dry and flaky. Rachel's protocol has literally changed the texture and complexion of my skin to the point where I'm starting to get ID'd again, which makes you feel good at literally any age. So if you haven't booked your session yet, then head over to rachelvarga.ca to learn more. Welcome, everyone. We have a very special guest today, Lucas Owen, coming all the way from Australia. And so he is one of Australia's leading biohackers with over 7 years of experience researching and experimenting with nootropics and other performance-enhancing compounds. And he is really extremely motivated to discover something big for science, and something hopefully that can benefit millions of people globally. So Lucas offers cutting-edge health content ranging from nutrition research to hormone research and, of course, nootropics, which we'll be diving in a lot today. And some of these, you know, like most of the planet have not even heard of, myself included. So Lucas thrives on really offering insanely valuable content on a global scale, and we'll be unpacking some of those nuggets in today's show of beauty and the biohacker. And of course, I am your co-host, the biohacking side of Beauty and the Biohacker. I am Katie with, you know, I've got about 3 years of experience in just self-experimenting and a YouTube channel all devoted to the latest biohacking gadgets and products that I really investigate and test on myself and then share that content with others.
And my name is Rachel Varga. I'm the beauty side of Beauty and the Biohacker here as a board-certified aesthetic nurse specialist with nearly 10 years in the industry and 20,000 procedures later. I just love talking about what works, what makes our skin look better, what helps us age better. And you can check out all things at that, you know, one-on-one consultations wherever you are in the world, rachelvarga.ca. But before we get started, be sure to subscribe to the Beauty and the Biohacker podcast here and get on our newsletter at beautyandthebiohacker.com so you know when we put out new episodes and, you know, special discounts and offerings and stuff like that. So I'm really excited about this interview here with you, Lucas.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm pumped to talk about topics that I feel really passionate about, and yeah, can't wait to spread some cool information.
Yeah, and we are going to dive into everything from nootropics to performance and male health. And I will also say that Lucas has a fantastic podcast of his own. So after you listen to this one, make sure you go and check out Boost Your Biology, where he goes into some of the weeds on many of the compounds that we're going to just kind of skim the surface on. So before we kind of get into the nitty-gritty, just give us a little bit of background about yourself. I know, you know, in speaking with you, and you are a friend, like your dad was a pharmacist. And so you grew up in this kind of environment. You had done soccer, you know, growing up. So what really sparked your interest in, you know, kind of taking on years worth of research to kind of understand what's going on in your brain?
Yeah, well, I guess really for me, it started out, playing professional soccer and then wanting to find ways to just improve my performance on the soccer field. And then I, you know, came across certain supplements and experimented with them and noticed a difference when I was playing, that it was having a, you know, positive impact on my performance on the soccer field. And then from there, I just fell in love with the concept of like utilizing supplements and utilizing other biohacks to basically just improve my well-being across other domains of my life. So that was like sleep, and then it was like other aspects such as stress management and some other things like that. So I just sort of fell in love with being able to take control of your physiology. And then part of that has sort of led me to where I am today, where I want to just share what I've learned along the way and provide such cutting edge research.
And so I'd love to kind of start to talk about some of what you offer in your professional life, and you've got this amazing masterclass that people can actually take with you and really start to understand all elements of nootropics. And you do have this really interesting term that you coined, cosmetic neurology. And let's talk about what that actually means.
So does this mean that peptides can make us more beautiful? Because peptides have been used in medical grade skincare for a long time now to basically help with the cell signaling. When you put something on your skin, we want it to do things like stimulate collagen production or provide antioxidant protection. So what the heck does this mean? Because this fascinates me, cosmetic neurology.
Yeah. So basically it's around the premise of being able to hijack or just take control of your neurotransmitters in the way that you perceive the world and think. So basically that's like, it's understanding what a compound does on paper and then applying that to your everyday life. Basically, it's like viewing the body as a computer with multiple systems and inputs, and then manipulating that with scientific research and then experimenting, and then basically just being able to perform at your peak under certain, like in the right context, if that makes sense. So like it's a very empowering sort of term, and I hope people like it, because it's a really, I know for some people, like that idea of being able to sort of activate a certain way of maybe communicating or a way of thinking or perceiving is really, that's really powerful. Like the best example would be like a job interview. Like let's say somebody's going for a job interview and they want to be like socially confident, not inhibited, not feeling, because you don't want to be feeling like you're overthinking when you're going into a job interview. So then that's where cosmetic neurology, understanding that and then applying it, can really make a difference to someone's quality of life.
When I was doing some research for our talk today, I actually looked at some of Dr. Joe Dispenza's work. And in the 90s, he put out a really good documentary called What the Bleep Do We Know? And what's really cool in that show is they kind of highlighted how peptides really work. So when we're in, say, for example, in a job interview, or we're in a stressful situation, our body gets used to basically creating peptides to then elicit an emotional response. So if we can kind of adjust that so that if we know we're typically going to respond in this way, but we want to respond another way, we can kind of hack our neurology in that way. So when I talk about like cosmetic dermatology and things like that, it's like how to not just make your skin function well, but make it look good. So that's kind of am I understanding this correctly? It's like you have neurology, but you can put the cosmetic, which is like an additional way to kind of enhance it.
And also that since Rachel brought up peptides and we're going to be talking about everything, there's going to be a lot of phrases out, from peptides to nootropics to androgens and all of these different, adaptogens as well. Like, maybe for listeners who aren't really familiar with some of these terms, maybe you can just kind of unpack the different main differences for people to understand what some of these compounds are.
Okay, so well, let's sort of start with maybe the adaptogens, because I know many of your listeners will be familiar with them. So basically that term describes any sort of compound that can help the body cope with either physiological or psychological stresses. So that can be, for example, a classic adaptogen would be like rhodiola, which has been, very well evaluated to combat low oxygen environments to support like physical activity, physical endurance, things like that. But then it's also been shown to combat like mental fatigue and some other neurological issues. So That's the first term, like adaptogen. So that's basically all-encompassing, basically combats, helps the body combat stress. And then we have another term that you mentioned before, Katie, peptides. So this one will be a bit of a, like, I hope it doesn't scare people off too much because, you know, it sounds like it's doping and it's illegal and things like that. But really, our body makes hundreds of peptides, and it's basically just a sequence of amino acids, and amino acids are found in food that we eat. So if people don't need to be scared of that phrase, peptides. For example, the most well-known peptide would be oxytocin. So there's that's like the one of the most well-known ones. But there's the term sort of they can cross over each other. Like a hormone can be a peptide. Like they often interchange, but overall, I think, and then we've got nootropics, which we've spoken about before, and nootropics again is that broad category of something that's either natural or synthetic that can improve overall cognitive function. So that can be memory, focus, attention, concentration, anxiety, things like that.
So what does NASA do with this stuff?
NASA, like the astronauts.
Yeah, like they got to build everything that they do in space ends up coming up here. So are you familiar with anything?
Yeah.
There's
actually they did, the Russian cosmonauts used to utilize Phenibut, which is used to combat like anxiety and things like that. And also there's other compounds like bromantane, which I've spoken about in my course. Where it basically, that's banned by WADA because it's so effective at improving physical endurance. But a lot of these compounds just basically work around helping the body deal with stress. And like we've spoken about stress numerous times. And I mean, look at the sort of life that we all live in. EMFs, you know, we've got like emotional stress, we've got physical stress, we've got pollution, things like that. That's where I think these compounds can really come in and just help someone get back up to where they should be. Like that's where they should be, but they've just been bombarded. They've just been smashed and their baseline's dropped so far down.
Yeah. And, you know, when you mentioned space, it made me think of kind of like, you know, certain professions like pilots, for instance, and I would even say shift workers, people who work very strange schedules, could probably benefit a lot from some of the, you know, effects like, you know, mild stimulating or you know, wakefulness. I know there are, we'll get into some more of the classified compounds, you know, modafinil and stuff like that in just a moment. But, you know, what's been kind of your take, Lucas, on who like really does well with nootropics? You know, is it students? Is it people in shift work? Or, you know, I mean, I'm sure you could argue everybody.
High-functioning entrepreneurs.
Yeah, but what is the main demographic we're talking about here?
Yeah, I think, Rachel hit it on the head. That's like high-pressure jobs or entrepreneurs that have like, you know, they're working long hours and they need to be mentally sharp, limited sleep, or maybe they're running by on like 6 to 7 hours of sleep a night. Any sort of condition where they are required to be highly focused, you know, maintaining attention span for a long period of time, have good memory recall. Those sort of conditions are, you know, best suited to, you know, taking advantage of nootropics. Definitely, yeah.
I used to play a video game called StarCraft. And yes, I did grow up being a gamer, Counter-Strike, all that stuff, you name it. So in StarCraft, I'd be I'd be Terran. And they had their army dudes and you could select, you know, use Stimpak. And that's probably what that was, like these dudes in the suits in the video games. And then if, you know, you're in battle, they'd use their stim pack. And this stuff was kind of like starting to enter the mainstream thought process a long time ago. So I have a feeling it was certainly used for military and space applications. And that was a long time ago. That was in like the late 90s, early 2000s. Sorry, just nerd moment.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny you bring that up because actually, the Russian military soldiers did utilize some of the psychostimulants because they did help combat, you know, they did help with that alertness, attention, the arousal, the vigor. And you can sort of translate that. Not only is it applicable to like military soldiers, but basically think about athletes, like fighters and things like that. Like they need to be charged. Their arousal actually needs to be over the top or like under certain conditions, you know? So, I actually, when I first got into nootropics, I was really excited to actually, I was so specific about where I wanted to like plant my feet. And that was specifically to work with athletes to improve their sports performance with nootropics. I decided that like 5 years ago. It was very niche, but yeah, it's just I really find that an untapped area that no one's really exploring.
Mm-hmm. Do you think it's because there, you know, can be some controversy around some of these, you know, compounds? I know phenylparacetam, for instance, is currently banned for use in athletic, you know, competitions. So how difficult is that to navigate?
Yeah, it's a question that gets asked quite a lot, particularly with a lot of the clients that I've worked with is like, oh, can I use this product? Is it safe? Like, is it not, you know, is it banned by WADA? So fortunately, there's definitely a wide variety of compounds that can be used that are not banned. There's hundreds. There's only a select few that are banned, but there are still many that can make a very, very significant impact on their performance without compromising their professional status. Yeah.
Now, the ones that are banned, is that like, you know, in some ways I'm thinking, well, those are probably the ones that work the best. So, you know, is there some kind of like give and take there where you're like, okay, well, if it's banned, it's banned for a reason. So maybe if I'm not involved in that sport, I should be buying that because it's clearly like it's going to work, right?
That's the exact mindset that majority of like the athletes that are not in that high, like super elite status, they're the ones that really just like, they're the ones that want to abuse those compounds.
Yeah, my hubby's a pro athlete, and with one of his competitions, you know, we're looking at the fight, and his opponent was a total beast in the ring in kickboxing, and we were definitely speculating because the guy had a extremely rough weight cut. He dropped a lot of weight, and he was just a beast in the ring. So ever since that fight, we're like, oh, we kind of wonder if he was doing that. But again, it would be a compound that if they tested, which unfortunately they don't really. So I have a feeling a lot of high level fighters that are working for organizations that don't really do a lot of rigorous testing for compounds, you know, they're doing it.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. For sure.
Now, the way I first got into nootropics, and this is so cliche, but I'm going to bring it up anyway. I was obsessed with the movie Limitless with Bradley Cooper. I think when I saw that movie, I said to myself, oh my God, does this thing exist? And this thing I'm talking about, the NZT, like, you know, fake nootropic compound that they devised where you could literally unlock and access all parts of your brain of all time. And it just looked so amazing. So Lucas, did this film have an impact, you know, on your initial interest with nootropics, or were you already like deep into the weeds with it by the time it came out?
Yeah, I think it definitely amplified my interest. I was probably dabbling with a few compounds before that movie, but it's funny if you actually go back and have a look at the Google Analytics and, you know, the search terms, the term nootropic was like, it just grew exponentially after the movie Limitless. And that was like really what I think put them on the map. But yeah, unfortunately, like, yeah, that whole concept of, you know, finding the NZT pill. Well, like there are things that have come close to like feeling like you're in God mode. I've created certain stacks that have literally put me into states of like hyper confident, like super, like just very mentally sharp, very just like no anxiety. You just feel like you can dominate any sort of scenario.
That's so cool. It's probably blocking emotions and peptides related to fear and self-doubt because that's its own cascade. So that's great. If you can kind of like block those channels for neurotransmitters and peptides and just like have like, whoo, just, you know, full steam ahead. That makes sense to me.
Yeah, it's actually this morning I was messaging Ben Greenfield and I sent him an article literally on that topic. It's called decycloserine, which like it initiates fear extinction. So it's like literally blocking that fear. Because think about it, like some people, let's say they've had a traumatic experience going to like their job or whatever, and every time they think about their job, their body is going to start to elicit all the symptoms of being in fear or stress mode. So if we can block that response, then go to work when we're not in fear mode, then we can perform better. So I love that concept of hacking fear extinction.
This comes down to neural pathways. It's like when you are programmed to feel a certain way in a certain situation, that's how you're going to feel that. So if you maybe, for example, use nootropics to block that, and then you create a whole new set of neural pathways, then you could potentially overcome that previous state through nootropics and then be able to have developed so many connections in your brain to then respond in the ideal way.
Just, I want to quickly touch on I mentioned oxytocin before. There's a really funny or fascinating study that shows that oxytocin can improve mind reading in humans.
Oh my gosh, Rachel just like lost.
I need
her.
This. I mean, let's heighten my ESP right now. Give it to me. Or wait, maybe I'll just learn to cultivate it myself.
So I already knew you were going to ask that question before because I read your mind.
He just totally like, you know.
Oh snap!
He mind tricked you. That's amazing. Yeah.
What color am I thinking? Just kidding. I'm not going to put you on spot.
So Lucas, you raise a great point. There's so many of these like fantastic nootropics that can do all these amazing things, right? You know, block fear, increase ESP, you know, help your cognition. But like, what are the downsides? Do you end up taking a loss on your next day because you decided to cash in on that one day of God mode, for instance?
Yeah. Yeah. So this comes back to like compounds that are sustainable. So like, for example, things like modafinil or very hardcore stimulants, I just don't see them as like truly sustainable nootropics because they end up borrowing from the future and then they leave you feeling depleted the next day. I don't like any nootropic that does that because I don't want to feel crappy the next day. I want to feel, if I took something, I want to go back to just normal the next day. There's definitely consequences, and you see guys that have abused and like people that have abused compounds and then they run into issues because now they've either downregulated a certain pathway and they're struggling to just get back to normal. And that's, again, I cover a lot of that. I want to talk and promote strategies to offset and counteract that because that's where having an understanding on like various pathways in the brain and these certain nootropics can really come in handy so that maybe you can use something to get you really high above baseline, take something next day to bring you back sort of thing. So it's, yeah, it can be a risky game to play if you're not careful, that's for sure.
When we're looking at making, you know, peptides or enzymes in the body, we have a chemical reaction. You got a couple of reactants and then you have your product. And then what that does is it can create a feedback loop, right? So say, for example, you take too many reactants over here to make enzymes here down the line, it is going to have a side effect. So anytime you take something, there is a side effect because you're taking cofactors and reactants and things like that. So it is definitely something I'm glad that we're talking about.
There is one compound, you've probably heard of pregnenolone. It's like the precursor hormone. Funnily, and that was probably one of my worst experiments. I'll probably never do that again. That actually is different because it, you know, most hormones have a negative feedback. Like once you take it, the body shuts down. This is the opposite. Once you take it, the body makes more of it, which is really bizarre. But yeah, that pregnenolone experience actually, it definitely induced a state of like depersonalization for like a week, and it took me a while to like get back to normal.
Now, this kind of ties into your slap back phenomenon that you talk about on the masterclass, which actually was the first time I've ever heard somebody talking about taking nootropics to actually feel worse in order to feel better. And I would love for you to unpack that a bit, because I'm still confused. I just always want to feel 100%, but I sort of understand where you're coming from.
Is it to create contrast?
Well, what it does is it's like the complete opposite of like euphoria. So like you're literally inducing or creating a state of, and when I say you feel bad, I don't mean you're like feeling just bedridden, or like, it just means that your pleasure system is blunted for a temporary period of time to then eventually get a heightened response to that, like in the days following. So that snapback phenomenon is something that I've really tried to coin, and that's like around the premise of pushing yourself below baseline. Let's say it's a Sunday evening, and or let's say like it's Friday, you don't have anything planned for the weekend, and it's okay, all you want to do is work, you're not going to be social, you're not going to do anything really fun, then maybe like that's where, and I've done this numerous times where I've trialed certain compounds that I know are going to push me down, but then the rebound effect is like, it feels like it's more powerful than just taking like something that just brings you up. Like maybe it is that contrast. Maybe it is because like that, when you come back up, it's the fact that it's relative to how shitty you are feeling. So it just feels a lot better. But it's a really fun sort of concept.
Is that how you would recommend some people who say have overdone it with nootropics in the past and are just trying to get back to their baseline, or, you know, fix certain depletions? Is that a good option? And like, what would be an example? Is it anything you can actually buy, or do you have to get it, you know, through like a provider?
Yeah. So one good example is homotaurine. I know it's a weird name, but homotaurine. But basically, what that does is it blocks the GABA B receptors, like a receptor in the brain that's like regulates mood and reward and stuff. When you're blocking that receptor, it's not going to feel good. Like you don't feel good when you block that receptor. It causes, well, when I ran my experiments, it literally causes like a bit of nausea, a bit of appetite loss, generally a bit more antisocial. You don't really want to talk to people. But then the following day, like 24 hours later, that's when you get that resurge upregulation of that GABA B receptor to then feel better than you did previously. So it's like it's a really fascinating concept. And I'm always on the lookout for other compounds that can do this. You'd be familiar, Rachel, with low-dose naltrexone. Have you heard of that?
Jog my memory.
It's, Dr. Mercola has spoken about it. It's like an autoimmune protocol. It's used for like autoimmune diseases. It's an opioid blocker. It's basically used to treat heroin overdose. And that is a compound that can sort of block those endorphins acutely. So that doesn't feel good, obviously, but then the long term, and there's thousands of, if you go on YouTube and type in low-dose naltrexone, you'll see thousands of people reporting like amazing long-term improvements in mood and sleep and things like that. So it's pretty cool.
That kind of reminds me of the same mechanism of action, or maybe something similar to what kratom, you've heard of the kratom leaf, right? And what that's supposed to do, because I think it, you know, they've used it for people who do have opioid addictions. And so it basically is kind of almost mimicking that same pathway, but you're taking a very small natural, you know, leaf that's turned into a tea. I've tried it myself. There's different types of kratom. So some are more stimulating, some are more kind of like a body relaxation. So I imagine that's something that, you know, you're looking into as well, that and even cavalactones, you know, as some natural alternatives to some more, you know, recreational style drugs.
Yeah, of course. I'm always on the lookout for new compounds, always.
if there's one thing I've learned in my experience in rejuvenation, it's you kind of don't always want to be the guinea pig or turn your clients into guinea pigs. So I do personally clinically have a bit of a 7-8 year rule. And I don't do that to like not be forward thinking. But what I do is I let other clinicians kind of like figure out the kinks so that when I'm about to offer something to my clients, for example, cannula needle work for applying hyaluronic acid dermal fillers, it takes a couple of years for the protocols and the way that things are implemented to kind of be honed in. So I definitely look forward to, you know, seeing a little bit more information on this in the future and like, you know, different protocols.
Yeah, it's definitely an exciting space to keep a lookout for.
I'm definitely a guinea pig. I will take anything as long as Lucas says it's okay. After watching your masterclass, I was like, add to cart. So I am just like always looking to feel better, you know, optimize my health. And I mean, I got into Racetams the second I heard Dave Asprey talking about it. And this goes back a couple of years ago. So I have like no holds, you know, I don't hold back when it comes to just experimenting, but I agree. Like, I think the most important thing, and you know, to Rachel's point, is you really want to make sure that other people have tested it and that you're not just going and like sourcing this yourself. And so like, Lucas, you have, you know, 8 probably plus more years of experience testing these things on yourself. So there's a vote of confidence that you can have when you like talk to somebody and you know, like, okay, this might have worked for them, so I'm going to give it a try. You mentioned oxytocin before, and I'd love to talk about this with you because I actually just ordered C-Max, which you've probably heard of, which is a nasal spray, because you got me onto science.bio, and I just was like, add to cart. And so basically what it does is, I'm going to let you explain what oxytocin does, but this spray has been pretty effective and it's, you know, it's quick. It has a very short half-life, but maybe you can break down why somebody would want to have a proper amount of oxytocin. And then let's also talk about the dark side of having plastics in your household.
Sure. Yeah. So when let's sort of break down oxytocin from its basic, like, physiological function. So when the best way to understand this hormone is obviously the bonding, and as soon as you fall in love, sort of hormone that's released. If you're snuggling up with your partner or your.
I think Katie and I have a little bit of an oxytocin.
That was actually the original name of our podcast.
So that's like, yeah, that's part of its physiological function. If you have a look at like, if you take a step back and have a look at what makes people happy, what's like the number one thing is like feeling a sense of community, right? Like it's, or feeling like part of a tribe or social connection. And that's the one thing that I think a lot of people are missing, right? A lot of people are missing that social connection, and therefore their oxytocin release and their production is probably less than what it should be, or it's not at its peak production. And so what that will lead to is addictive tendencies. So like oxytocin has been used to treat addiction, nicotine addiction, like other type alcoholism, things like that. So oxytocin does play a pivotal role in modulating like libido, like just general mood and connection, things like that. And there are like you said, Katie, there are compounds that can work on increasing oxytocin and supporting its production. If you can't get it naturally through like a proper connection, then you can sort of like supplement and make up for, or if you're wanting to strengthen the connection with your partner, or you know, just generally want to feel more empathetic. So when we look at, we'll take a step back and we'll have a look at some of the negatives of too much oxytocin. So that can lead to highly emotional, like just very, very empathetic, and so that can be problematic, particularly for practitioners and things like that who, you know, consulting clients, and then they're taking on board all of their pain and suffering, and then they can't actually release it themselves because they're feeling so damn attached to their clients. that can be an issue. So, yeah, I don't think there's actually any way that we can measure our blood levels of oxytocin. It's just not going to be accurate. But it's definitely a hormone that people, you know, should become more familiar with, I guess.
Especially nowadays, right? I mean, given the environment, right? And I think that Rachel and I were probably just ESPing there, right? If you live alone, like, is this something to supplement?
Or can you meditate your way there? So just playing a devil's advocate here. Can we, you know, for example, I did 3 hours of meditation the other night and I was just thinking about good things, loving thoughts, exciting, happy, loving experiences. So I'm sure that I was, you know, getting a bit of oxytocin release that way instead of supplementing it. So what's your thoughts on meditating and really focusing on, say, the word, the feeling, the frequency of love?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think there's like technologies and like sort of audio. There's definitely frequencies that we can listen to that can. There's no research on this, but I'm confident that they would, you know.
I swear by 432 hertz. That's like one of my favorite binaural beats, 432 hertz. It's funny, I was listening to a track that's on 432 hertz and then YouTube kicked over to something else and I was just like agitated and it's like, no, I just want to go back to that one. And I literally did that hour session 3 times in a row. It was really interesting. But each time YouTube went over to another one, I felt completely different.
Yeah. I think it's like, it's funny, Katie, you mentioned before about like how plastic can impact, you know, oxytocin. That was I did a YouTube video on that where I basically explained how BPA can, because it crosses the placenta and can impact the fetus, that can induce, and this is crazy, it can impact oxytocin release for like 3 generations down. So like if the mother had, yeah, I know. So like it's having such a dramatic effect on oxytocin production for the child. But that's just one of the, you know, harmful effects of BPA, but there's going to be other, like I'm just focusing on oxytocin, but BPA is going to affect other hormones, is going to affect like the brain development, bone and mineral density and things like that. So it's something to keep a lookout for.
What you mentioned there is actually when we expose ourselves to certain peptides, right? Getting our body to say make certain proteins or we ingest certain proteins, it can actually have an impact on our DNA, not just our epigenetics, which is the expression of our DNA. So what you said actually just also helped to support that there can be noticeable effects multiple generations down the line. So we really have to be careful what we expose ourselves to, especially right now, and even just, you know, proteins.
Yeah, exactly.
So speaking of testing, I would love for you to kind of unpack what is there out there right now for us to actually know the levels of our neurotransmitters, because I don't certainly know of any test that would be at home or easy to, you know, run that could let us know what our dopamine and serotonin levels are. Is there, you know, anything in the works that you think would be something that would be effective for us to be able to gauge this kind of stuff?
Yeah, and this is definitely something I'm keeping a lookout for. But all we have right now really is like the organic acids test, which does like metabolites of neurotransmitters. Yes, that gives us like a decent snapshot at where someone's at. But what really matters is whereabouts in the brain these neurotransmitters are, and also how strongly they're binding to their receptors. Like you could be producing a lot of like dopamine, but if your dopamine D2 receptors are downregulated, you're going to feel as if you have low dopamine. So like that's why measuring these, unless you want to like cut open your brain and send a sample to the lab, like I don't think it's ever going to be super accurate, unfortunately.
Oh, that's so unfortunate because like, yeah, I mean, I've heard of using urine sticks, but you're really then just kind of seeing what was in your urine, and what you've excreted, but that doesn't necessarily mean you're in excess or deficient. It's really hard to gauge. So I guess at this point, it's pretty much anecdotal, right? Like how you feel is more indicative.
Yeah. And I think I always emphasize this is like building up that self-awareness before you take these compounds. You need to have, meditate, like understand where you're at. Because certain compounds can definitely make you better in one domain, but then make you really shit in another domain. For example, like you said before, Rachel, about like when I felt like hyper-confident, hyper-focused, whatever. But then the trade-off was that I lost the emotional depth. So like I become more robotic, but I actually didn't get to feel majority of, like, that's why it's a really, I'm still manipulating those pathways now. I'm just trying to come back to like a nice even keel. But when you push something in one direction, you are going to be offsetting another domain. Like, it's just inevitable.
Every action has an equal and opposite reaction. So, you know, when we're thinking about taking some of these supplements, you do have to be really aware of that. And say, for example, you have an underlying autoimmune condition or, you know, psychological, psychiatric conditions, I would maybe put some warnings out there for those individuals. Obviously, this isn't medical advice. You need to seek the guidance of a licensed physician if you think you have a medical condition.
Yeah, exactly.
So, Lucas, I am dying to know your thoughts on some more of the, I don't even know if I'd call them underground, but more kind of fringe and a little bit more controversial, shall we say, nootropics. So by this, I am talking about modafinil and, of course, the precursor, I believe, to modafinil, which is adrafinil. So what's going on with these two compounds? And, you know, have you used them, and what's been your experience, and who would this work for? I mean, if you technically can get a prescription for modafinil, but otherwise it's, you know, illegal in the United States without one.
Yeah. So with modafinil, the drug was originally developed to treat narcolepsy, so people that fall asleep like multiple times throughout the day. And it's very effective at that. Like, it's very effective at keeping someone awake and alert. But at the same time, as I just mentioned previously, like, it is very powerful in that domain, in that it has a very long half-life and it can really disrupt sleep. Even if somebody takes it at, say, like 10 or 11 a.m., it's still going to impair their sleep quality. And then what happens over time is that because they've started using it day in, day out, like without taking a break, first of all, they build, it becomes very habitual. So then it's not, I wouldn't say it's addictive, but it becomes very habitual. And then when they withdraw from the drug, because they've suffered from such crappy sleep, continuously, then eventually on day 7, they're actually functioning. If they remove the drug, then they're functioning as if they've lost a full night of sleep because it's all just accumulating. So like, that's where I think modafinil is good and it has its time and place. For example, if you have to do a shift, like if you're working shift work or whatever, and you need to be absolutely focused for like 12 to 16 hours, then by all means, like maybe, yeah, modafinil is your drug of choice, is your nootropic of choice. But I definitely think there are much more sustainable nootropics that, again, like I cover a lot of those underground ones in my masterclass where I look at some of the alternatives and things like that. And the adrafinil is just like a pro drug of modafinil and just gets metabolized a little bit differently and just, I think it's a little bit cheaper than modafinil as well.
Well, it's also legal. Like, why is modafinil, you know, not, you're not allowed to buy it in the United States online, but you can buy adrafinil? I'm just kind of confused. Like, what is the difference in the mechanism of action? If you can speak to that.
It's based around just how the liver metabolizes the drug. So I think from memory, I have to probably polish, haven't spent much time researching these two compounds recently, but I think it's just the way the liver metabolizes the drug and it turns into like a prodrug of modafinil. So basically it's just around. Yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah. I mean, I just was kind of curious because I've seen on forums people talking about it, but I, you know, was always wondering what that gray zone was. If it is the pro drug, like, and it's doing the same thing, then, you know, why ban one and not the other? But, you know, who knows? And maybe I, you know, by the time you're listening to this podcast 4 years in the future, maybe Adrafinil is no longer on the US market. But, you know, I think that that just kind of will remain to be seen in time.
Yeah, yeah. I will be posting some like fancy research on modafinil because I've got my like I've pinpointed some really cool studies. So I'll be sharing a lot of that. If your listeners want to learn more about modafinil, I'll be posting a lot of that like on my YouTube so they can learn more about what it does and how it works and stuff. Yeah.
That's great.
All right, let's move on to the next question. Let's talk about what are racetams? Why should we supplement with choline while we're taking this?
Okay, so the the racetams are like the classic nootropics, and this is Katie will probably that's where you heard about Dave Asprey talk about it, right? Like back in the day.
Yeah, I've literally experimented with every single one of them.
Of course you have.
I was like, does Dave take this? Okay, sure. Why not?
When I see him, he's like spraying stuff in his mouth. He's taking all sorts of things all the time.
I know, but
he's like a well-greased machine. He knows exactly what his body needs. When he's in an environment where, say, there's, you know, some mold or some environmental stuff, like he responds really quickly. He's it's pretty cool to like see him do that, and he'll kind of notice things. Okay, maybe I'll take some of this right now to counteract this. And yeah, I wish I could like be in his head, like a little fly on the wall.
Yeah, with the racetams, obviously there's like a full suite. You know, you've got piracetam, oxiracetam, phenylparacetam, prami, ani. Like there's so many different types, and they all have very unique, like very subtle differences. But they are very well researched in rat studies. And there's a few human studies on piracetam as well. But basically, they are very well known to be very neuroprotective. So like they protect the brain against, they're pretty adaptogenic in a sense because they're protecting the brain against obnoxious stress and like hypoxia and things like that. So one thing that's often debated is whether or not these compounds require a choline source or like a choline to stack it alongside. And that's because the theory is that these compounds burn through your acetylcholine levels. And so it's required that we replenish the acetylcholine production with the precursors such as CDP choline, choline bitartrate, alpha GPC, but
or just eggs, right?
Yeah, or you just smash like 4 eggs a day, and you don't need a choline source. But I think something that people need to be careful of is overdoing the choline, because when you overdo the acetylcholine, like you can become pretty like robotic and flat in a sense, and that can really quickly happen when you're adding in like acetylcholinesterase inhibitor like huperzine A and things like that. So comes back to trial and error. It's like basically some people are very choline dominant. Like my older brother, he's very, very acetylcholine dominant. So anytime I give him something that increases acetylcholine, he actually gets flat, but his general like memory recall is phenomenal, like absolutely phenomenal. So yeah, it comes back to trial and error with the racetams.
My fiance just got his Viome test results back, and his choline levels, they recommend he stop eating almonds and eggs because they're so high. And yeah, I mean, he does have some robotic tendencies for sure. And he is sharp as a wit. I hope he's not listening to this, but I mean, you know, it's definitely like, he's now like, okay, I was over supplementing because of his sort of he kind of follows like a carnivore diet. So he eats like 6 eggs a day, and he was taking a CDP choline. He was taking alpha GPC. And, you know, so it's like, oh my goodness, sometimes you have to really stop and take a look at your diet and understand, oh, am I getting too much of this or too little of that? Because if you start to just stack everything on top, that's when you start to run into problems.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm. I have a confession to make.
Yeah.
I've been taking actually the most potent nootropic known to man throughout this entire interview. Can you guess what it is?
Oh, I think I might have one little guess.
Bulletproof coffee. And yes, it's bulletproof coffee.
Nothing microdosed in there, right?
well, you know, I'll add my collagen and things like that, of course. It's like, you should see me add my stuff in the morning. I'll add like a little bit of cinnamon because my biome test told me I needed some cinnamon in there. I think all of this stuff, the more we can arm ourselves with what's happening in our gut, how we're feeling in our mind, how we're interacting in the world, and just kind of like play around and see what works. But this coffee clearly works for me.
Yeah. I mean, caffeine is a nootropic after all, right? Like it's, you know, it's probably that. I believe you talked about this in your masterclass, like that and nicotine, which is so funny because those are like two of the most addictive chemicals, right? And it's like, but they also can really work in the right dosage and, you know, depending on your own level of, you know, addictive personality, so to speak. And I would definitely suggest for people who are not, you know, a fan of caffeine, definitely check out Lucas's masterclass because you talk about a lot of things I had never heard of, like teacrine. And I was like, what is that? And it was just fascinating because a lot of these things have similar chemical properties to caffeine without that kind of overstimulating rush. So definitely something to keep in mind too. So let's move on to men's stuff, shall we? And you know, this is going to be a little bit more on kind of like the hormonal side of things. And I would love for you to just kind of first walk us through what got you so excited about this. You talk about this prolifically on your channel and your podcast, hacking men's health. Why dive into this particular thing, you know, which is a little bit separate from nootropics?
Yeah, well, just because I've seen so many guys suffering from low testosterone, and it really is an epidemic. And there are so many factors that are contributing to it. You know, poor diet, obesity, the wrong type of exercise.
Personal care products. So for example, shaving cream, your shampoo, your conditioner, your body spray, your deodorants, parabens, phthalates, sulfates, artificial dyes, fragrances. Guys, you got to pay attention to this stuff because that's actually one of the biggest environmental exposures that the guys have is actually through their personal skincare products and hygiene stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. And deploying strategies to detoxify those chemicals is like, it should be number one priority, to be honest. Like for example, sauna usage, utilizing calcium deglucarate, which helps with those xenoestrogens. But yeah, I think testosterone really is like, it's bashed by the media, and it's often like, you know, for men, they're most men associated with just feeling like very aggressive and very like alpha male and things like that. But honestly, like there is no way a guy can feel good with low testosterone. It's just not possible. Like how can they, not from like a sexual function, like as we know that testosterone influences libido, erection quality, things like that. But testosterone really is a primitive hormone for channeling their energy and enabling men to lock onto something and focus on one task at hand. And that's where there's like a lot of crossover between testosterone and nootropics. And that's why I think, and that's why I built like a testosterone course, is to help men optimize their hormones first, and then they can tap into like these nootropics, because there is a lot of crossover and you know, I've seen so many guys feel so much better when they optimize their hormones. And it happened to myself. Like I maxed out my own testosterone to, you know, it's basically off the scale as high as I could naturally. And yeah, I mean, I definitely feel good for doing so. So yeah.
I know for guys, it, you know, one of my best friends, he had low testosterone, was starting to lose his hair, and then he started taking it and, you know, got into bodybuilding. He was jacked. You know, I'd take him when I needed to go travel. He'd be my bodyguard. It was actually very helpful having him around. It's like clear the path, right? And yeah, I think that testosterone for guys is something that they want to hear more about, but they don't always know where to look. And actually, I did a saliva test while I was taking a really tough exam. It was a medical college admission test, probably one of the most stressful times in my life. And I was like, oh, I'm curious what my hormones are doing. And actually, my testosterone was a little bit elevated. And I also maybe think that that might be why I have certain things that excite me or that I enjoy doing that are maybe a little bit more kind of like male dominated, like playing guitar, playing video games, stuff like that. It's really interesting how your hormonal levels can impact, you know, some of the activities that you might even be drawn to. But no, I don't have like weird hair growth or weird other symptoms.
I'm testosterone dominant too.
Woo! High five, girlfriend.
Yeah. I mean, like I've gotten my levels checked. I do it pretty frequently. And yeah, I mean, like it's a little bit above, and it makes so much sense because of
the things I'm
also interested in, and the confidence aspect, right? I think that when you're in this kind of profession where you're on camera, you're talking to people all the time, like it gives you a little bit of an edge. And so, you know, I'm fine with that, you know, and again, to Rachel's point, like there's no weird side effects, just it's more a mental thing for me. So who knows? I mean, is there ways that we can, both women and men can optimize their testosterone levels naturally?
Oh yeah. So the first one is probably like really what put me on the map. And like, I got interviewed on the radio a couple of times about this particular practice. And it's around the fact that men should be icing their testicles to boost testosterone.
My husband actually will sometimes sleep with an ice pack when it's really hot out, like on that area on him.
Well, he's already doing it.
He's already doing it. He didn't really know why. He's just like, I'm kind of hot. It feels kind of good. I'm going to tell him that. I'll get a kick out of that.
Yeah, I know it sounds pretty crazy, but you know, you hear about all the benefits of like cold showers and things like that. But when men like keep their, because the testicles are outside the body for a reason, they need to be kept cool. And so I created a whole Facebook group around this practice called Sub-Zero. And we've got like 3,000 men in the group who've all started like icing their balls. And all of them, literally every single guy has reported benefits from doing it. So that is free. Like it doesn't cost you any money. 10 minutes a day, like three times a day is like, a very simple strategy that men can utilize to boost libido, testosterone, and just general wellness.
Maybe let's just do a little PSA. Make sure you say, for example, have like a cloth between the ice pack and your skin so that you don't get an ice burn. That's important to know.
Yeah, of course.
And what else can you do like supplement wise? You know, I know you mentioned calcium deglucarate, which is actually something I have been taking for a while. So maybe that's one of the reasons. Are there any foods that we should be looking out for that can naturally boost testosterone as well?
Yep. So a lot of the organ meats, you've probably heard a lot about like the carnivore diet. A lot of those organ meats have so many of the right minerals and vitamins to support testosterone production. Super high cholesterol foods such as eggs. I mean, they're incredibly good for men. And then avoiding soy. I know it's debated quite a lot, but generally speaking, like guys need to avoid soy because it lowers DHT too much.
And what's DHT, if you can just break that down for listeners?
DHT is a metabolite of testosterone that's 3 to 10 times stronger than testosterone itself. So it's actually it's like the godfather hormone for men. So it plays a huge role in sexual function. It's often blamed for like affecting the prostate, which it's a long topic, and also hair loss as well. But yeah, in terms of like the other foods, so like aiming for monounsaturated fats, so like almonds, macadamia nuts, Avocados, coconut oil, these are most ideal for testosterone. And then avoiding the polyunsaturated fatty acids. So like sunflower oil, safflower oil, canola oil, all of these are really problematic for testosterone.
And they're in everything. If you are going out for a meal or you're getting takeout or whatever, literally all of your food is cooked in that crap. So I'm just going to throw this out there that doing different things for me, like playing my guitar, like hopping in my Jeep and going, you know, off-roading, things like that, having a mechanical breakdown, got to fix stuff. I'm in like that male dominated space. So I have like, I never really thought about it that way, but that's actually how I keep my testosterone levels up, is doing kind of stuff like that. But I wonder if music could impact that as well. Like for example, heavy metal, right? Probably like rock music.
That's really interesting. I've never sort of seen any association between the two, but in terms of activities, there was, I think, a study where they looked at like wood chopping, like men that were chopping wood. That is such a, isn't that such a like very masculine activity, chopping wood? That basically had an effect on testosterone and also body language as well. There's certain power poses that men can do, like for example, this one here.
I never do that. For anybody listening, he actually has his elbows raised up to his
ears. Oh, yeah, I like this one.
I look terrible doing it, but Lucas, you actually pull that off pretty well.
And then there's another one as well, like hands on the hips, like just standing.
Superman pose.
Yeah.
That have an impact. And then if you see a guy that's like slumped over like that, and really like that is going to have an effect on his hormones. So, you know, body posture, all everything plays a role.
I steal my husband's testosterone when we're working out and would be at the gym. I would go kiss him and I would steal some of his testosterone in his saliva. I'm not even kidding you. And then we would kind of joke about it. He's like, I'm not giving you any more of my testosterone. No kisses for you. It's really funny, actually. Oh, back and to martial arts. I bet you, like, because I would do, like, jiu-jitsu and kickboxing and stuff like that. Like, I'd be in a room full of dudes, right? So I'm probably, like, picking up some of their
pheromones.
Yeah. It was fun.
That's funny. That's so funny.
Coming back to the heavy metals thing, though, that you mentioned, and this is just kind of top of mind for me.
Cause I meant heavy metals, like, heavy metal music.
No, that's what I know. That's what I meant. Cool. yeah, that's where I'm going with this. I'm actually, it's top of mind for me because I am doing a video about like the neurotransmitter effects that music can have on your brain. And it turns out that there are definitely some types of music, heavy metal would be included, that have this kind of surprise element. So it's like this level of like uncertainty versus surprise. And so when you're listening to that, that's actually going to affect this thing called your reward prediction error. So when you get a reward that is greater than what you actually predicted, it increases your dopamine receptors in the brain. So by the very nature of listening to something that's a little bit surprising, a little bit shocking, like heavy metal, can actually be giving you a flood of dopamine naturally.
It's like when that guitar riff drops, right? Like the intro guitar to Dire Straits, Money for Nothing. Like you listen to that, you'll get fired up. Or another good song would be like Pantera, Cemetery Gates, or Metallica, Nothing Else Matters. Those are some pretty cool riffs that actually put me in a really good headspace.
Same with like Stairway to Heaven. The very end of that song, when it kicks in, it's euphoric. And that's really, you know, you can get there by listening to music, by taking nootropics, by eating the right foods. It's like this kind of whole like holistic kind of take on how can you max what you know feelings you want in the moment, just giving the tools that you have at your disposal. But sorry, we totally digressed away from the topic at hand. So I'm going to bring us back because I know we're almost out of time here. But Lucas, one of the things that I have really, you know, admired about what you've done in your space is that you've actually given people a lot of resources in which to figure out where to find these supplements. And for me, when I was first starting off and I didn't know how to look for a trusted vendor, I was so confused and buying a ton of crap on Amazon. Now I know better. But like, walk us through what you should be looking for with a trusted vendor, and how do you know that you're not just going to get stuff that is not what you actually paid for.
Like counterfeit stuff from third-party auction websites. Mm-hmm. Do not do that. Stop doing that, y'all.
Yeah, well, the first thing is to ensure the manufacturer or the vendor has like a third-party analysis completed on each batch that they make. So like a certificate of analysis that verifies that what it is actually what it is, like, and that it doesn't have any mold or contamination, things like that. That's really important. And the other point to that is also like on top of that is just being a part of these communities where people are trialing these compounds, and then like on Reddit and things like that, is actually like opening up threads and reviewing what people say about these compounds. Cause yeah, there are a lot of them that can be faked. And I've had my fair share of things that are not what they were. And you know, that's when you run into issues, long-term side effects and things like that. So my mission is like all of the vendors on my site, all of them I've either used or like researched very heavily and ensure that they do pass like strict quality control checks as well.
Also, not only where the product's manufactured, but where the constituents and ingredients are coming from, because I see this in skincare and, you know, beauty supplements. There was one gummy bear that was manufactured in the USA, but then Labdoor did a third-party test on it, and two of those gummies, which was kind of like the recommended amount for the day, actually exceeded the daily limit for lead. And so I would postulate that maybe some of their ingredients they were sourcing from places like China, which is kind of notorious for that. So just to actually look where they get their ingredients from.
Yeah, exactly.
And then, Lucas, how do you know if you are a consumer and you get something that is fraud, or, you know, that isn't working effectively? I mean, you obviously have kind of the resources and tools to be able to test these products yourself. But what if I'm just, you know, an everyday consumer? I try something. Oh, it didn't work for me. So I guess that whole compound doesn't work. What are some ways that people can actually understand when they get the products at home, like, oh, this is actually not what I thought it was going to be?
Yeah, well, I guess if as soon as they try the compound and if it possesses an effect that is completely different to what it's purported to do, then I would be questioning the, you know, reliability and validity of the actual product itself. And yeah, a great example of that is if something is way too energizing or way too stimulating or something, then I would question, you know, is this really CDP choline, for example? Because CDP choline is not renowned to make you feel this good. But having said that, there's still people that have paradoxical reactions to certain supplements. Some things that should be sedating in some people are actually stimulating. For example, taurine. If I take a high dose of taurine, you'd think that it would cause sedation because it's working on GABA and cortisol, things like that. But it actually gives me energy. Like, it doesn't actually make me sleepy at all. So, yeah, there's such a huge individual variance in how people respond. And honestly, that's where I think I want to help people build that self-awareness and understand how they can tap into these compounds and utilize them to suit their needs, because again, we're all so different, and there's no one size fits all. That's why I'm not really a huge fan on these pre-made stacks. I'm more so encouraging of people to build their own, like make their own, and find what works best for them.
That is fantastic advice, Lucas. And so some really great takeaways, you know what you're getting, know the manufacturer, look at the research they've been doing, talk to other people in the community. I certainly have gone onto Reddit, on Facebook groups, you know, and just be able to get some anecdotal data that you can then take away and you know, hopefully make a better, smarter decision as a consumer. I think that's wonderful. Just to wrap up, where can people find you? I know you have so much information out there right now, scattered all over the web. So tell us like the top places people can find you.
Yeah. Well, people should definitely check out my YouTube channel. If they just search Boost Your Biology, Going to be uploading a lot more videos there. And then my Instagram as well. That's ergogenic_health. And my website as well, ergogenic.health. They're like the main, they're probably like my top three platforms where I share like really, really useful information. So definitely check them out.
Awesome. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show, Lucas. Do you have any final words?
Not really. I just think that I want to, encourage people to not be afraid of this term biohacking and just I want them to realize that they can manipulate the way that they think, feel, and perform like on a day-to-day basis. Like that is within your control. So that's pretty much it. Thanks for having me, guys. It's been awesome. I knew it was going to be another fun episode. Thanks, Rach and Katie, for having me.
Yeah, for sure. And everybody tuning in, go ahead and make sure that you subscribe to the Beauty and the Biohacker podcast channel on YouTube as well. Hit that subscribe button and check out some more information that we have over at beautyandthebiohacker.com. And you can actually see all of our past interviews and information and updates and some of the things that are kind of pre-vetted by us to continue to help support you in your journey of looking awesome and feeling like a healthy rock star here with Katie and I at Beauty and the Biohacker.